The opinions expressed in the following program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Positive Thoughts with Uncle Tim. I am your host with
co-host Von Ruff.
And we also have a special guest, Scott, from Smart Recovery. He's come here to talk to us about getting over drug use, you know, and how to battle back from being in that situation. You know, a lot of people don't make it back from that that type of lifestyle. You know, we lose a lot of people daily when drug abuse is rampant, you know. And so we're trying to give some direction with Scott's advice. He has a program that we're going to learn about, and hope you guys get some good information that you can use with through all of this. So introduce yourself, Scott.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me. My name is Scott Slachter with Generational Recovery. And we started Generational Recovery almost 2 years ago, actually. And started off with a pilot program up in Belden High School. And through the program, what we were doing was we were working with teens through substance abuse related issues. And then kind of through that program, we started developing a little bit more. Just as we engaged more with the students, we realized there was a lot more going on than just, you know, drugs and alcohol. There was a lot of questions they had from, you know, peer pressure, bullying, identity issues, goal setting, all that stuff. And they really didn't know where to go. They were unsure if they could go home with it. Some of the stuff they didn't want to go to teachers or counselors or coaches with. So it really opened up good dialogue with them, and we've kind of restructured the program to overall just be an all-consuming mental health program.
That's great. That's a great job right there, because like you said, some people don't want to go to their parents about it, and some people can't confide in a friend because you really don't know who your friends are until times get really rough. So good job for that.
Yeah, very good job on that. Reaching out to the kids and youth, that's very important because they need it. Like peer pressure, they are attacked at a young age, about 11, 12 years old. I feel like kids starting getting pressured into like sex and drugs. So you guys are actually targeting them right now, and you're making them your main focus, because usually it's the adults that's getting the recovery, and people want to focus on adults to get that recovery and make sure they're beneficial for the future for themselves. But you all are taking it to the kids, and that's just a wonderful thing, I believe. And if how's that been going for you? Is that just one school you're in, or is that two or three?
We're working on getting into more school districts. COVID shut us down last spring, so we were there for half a semester, and then COVID happened. We got all positive reviews. We did a survey with the school, a questionnaire, 391 students. And of the 391 students, every single one of them said they were dealing with some type of what would be considered, you know, mental health, you know, issue or concerns or just questions. So, and I think the natural progression, you know, through adulthood is, you know, we set these bars, and you know, it used to be at 18, you know, you can buy tobacco, which they raised that to 21 now, but you could vote, or you can vote, and then the 21, you know, was alcohol. So you're kind of, you know, progressing towards these, I don't know if you call them goals, but these milestones, right, where you're able to do a little bit more as an adult, and be a little bit more, have a little bit more say in your everyday action, and, you know, you don't know the consequences of that. So we're really just trying to educate individuals on the consequences of, you know, what could happen. As an example for me, you know, I got really bad into alcohol, and I got in a lot of trouble with alcohol, and it was just one of those things that everything seems like it's under control until the whole world, you know, kind of is in your face.
Yeah.
So it's 0 to 100 just like that.
Yeah. And like you say, it flies under the radar. No one really tells you about it until, like you say, you hit rock bottom, and then it's like, damn, I was that far gone. You know, so like you say, commend you on finding them young and starting this program for the youngest, because it's so much pressure now. You know, like when I was a lot younger, it wasn't that much pressure. You might sneak a puff up your parents' cigarette when you light it off the stove. That was one of the things we did. Or, you know, find some alcohol left over in a can, and, you know, just to be doing something. But nowadays, you know, so much out here with social media, and they have so much access into what's going on. They see it, so they want to try it, you know, and the pressure to try it is overwhelming, you know.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's habit forming as well. So, like, with myself, I mean, the best way to just say it is, like, I didn't know I had a problem until it was very, very clear that I had a problem. So other people were telling me I had a problem. The state of Michigan was involved, so they were telling me I had a problem. And all of a sudden, it was like, you got to stop this right now, you know. And that's when it was just like, holy crap, like, I do have a problem. Like, this is not easy. And, you know, at the time, it was a lot of coping mechanisms. That was a coping mechanism for me. You know, there's healthy coping mechanisms, there's unhealthy coping mechanisms.
True.
That was obviously an unhealthy one for me. And, you know, it was a challenging time. I'm just over 2.5 years sober now, so.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
So, yeah, it's a blessing. It's a blessing to give back. Probably the main reason I got involved with Generational Recovery was because it was right. At the time, it was right when I was going through everything, and I had no idea, like, how I was going to, like, manage it all.
Exactly.
You know, I was thinking, you know, maybe, you know, I was thinking maybe 6 months I can stay clean, you know, maybe a year, but what am I going to do 2 years from now? Like, what am I going to do 5 years from now? And it just seemed impossible.
Mm.
So I met Mike Baker. He introduced me to Generational Recovery and Smart Recovery. And that's kind of where we just started talking weekly about, you know, my life and his path to where he was, and kind of figuring out, you know, what we could do together as a team going forward. And that's kind of when it just hit me. It's like, oh, you know, I can build this life in recovery, and I'll have all this, you know, essentially I'll have all this reason, this backup, this motivation to stay sober. And at the time, it was just, you know, a small goal. It was, you know, just try to get to tomorrow. And, you know, over time, I got more focused on the mission. And, you know, I think a year went by, and you know, it felt like forever to get that first year of sobriety under my belt. But since then, honestly, I haven't really been counting. The support's been there. The resources have been there. And I've been able to work with a lot of great people.
That's awesome right there. That's awesome. So how many people have you graduated out of this program? Has anyone graduated out of it? How does it work? Is it just a weekly to a monthly meetings? Or?
So we have daily meetings. I run 2 meetings a week. We started off with just the school program. We've progressed now to daily meetings. We have a sober house, which is, we have 6 individuals in the sober house. It's the way we try to run the sober house is we try to get individuals comfortable with just daily life as far as living on their own. Because, you know, the goal is that they're gonna move on from our house, they're gonna be on their own, and we want them to be as comfortable as can be, you know, with their sobriety, you know, having the resources to stay sober. So we've been working with a lot of local churches as well, and we're looking to get into the juvenile courts.
Nice. That's a good look right there, because they need them. They need somebody in there trying to structure those kids in a different manner than what they're getting, because they suffer from drug abuse too, you know, and they might not say it when they go through the court system of what led up to it, but usually it's drugs involved, you know, alcoholism, and nobody's talked about it. Are there any minority schools involved, you know, different schools that, I say you have, what, how many schools?
We had the one school pre-COVID, and right now we're working
to get more.
Yep, to get into 5 other school districts.
Okay, well, if you need our help to get into some minority schools, you know, around the inner city, you know, I'm here willing to do whatever, because, you know, for every spectrum, they gonna need it, man. It's really rough out here. So again, I'm glad to hear about this program. glad to see the direction of it. I don't know what COVID is bringing on again, so we might have a hiccup again. But if you don't, where do you see yourself going with it?
The program itself, we'd like to go statewide, nationwide. I was talking to Mike Baker the other day, and we were discussing kind of the potential growth for the program, and ideally it would be something that, you know, we would run our course and no one would ever need it. But you know, as COVID kind of showed us, you know, it's needed more than ever. Yeah. So isolation is a big thing people do when they're in addiction. And then we get comfortable with that state of mind, mm-hmm. you know, when we are isolating, and that in itself is a hard habit to kick. So what we like to focus on is just the all-encompassing mind, you know, possible issues that may have truly triggered the drug use or the alcohol abuse. Mm-hmm. A lot of times that's childhood traumas, whether you're a teenager, whether you're an adult. I see it a lot.
Yeah.
And for me, that was a big part of it, you know, and that was one of the things that I had to kind of revisit and go over. And, you know, really what you're doing is you're creating a healthy atmosphere for yourself. You're setting boundaries, you know. So when you're in an unhealthy atmosphere, you're teaching yourself to be able to assess the situation, get away from the situation. And I mean, the easiest way I can explain it is I always tell people, you know, my experience just professionally in business is if you truly want to achieve something, you know, go after it and you will get it. If people are telling you no, you know, if you have somebody that's always saying no, just replace them with someone that says yes.
True.
Very true to that. Mm. In this book, it brought me to chapter 6, and you talked about it earlier about creating a balance. And it has 7 different points. Number 1, take an inventory, basically take an inventory of yourself. That's like dealing with the problem you have and being honest with yourself, which would be number 2, is being honest with yourself that you have a problem. Number 3, go with your gut. Like you just said, like if you feel like you could do it, you should do it and not allow anyone to tell you that you shouldn't. Number 4, plan and prepare. I guess that's you guys going over together in a group of planning for your recovery and preparing for it.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, these tools could be used in really any aspect of life, whether you're, you know, going through recovery. I always say I feel like everybody's in some form of recovery.
They are.
It may be substance related, it may be relationship related, but we're always going through something, and that's just life. You're not going to get away from it. So. And that's something I found too. You know, I went through as much negative stuff when I was sober as I did when I was not sober. You know, life doesn't stop.
It doesn't.
So, you know, just being aware of, you know, who you are and understanding that everything won't be perfect. I like to go with your gut because I think the way we are built as humans is, you know, we do have that internal moral compass, right? So mm-hmm. We can identify whether we ignore it or not is another question, but we can identify if we're about to do something that's, you know, maybe problematic, maybe it's right, and just getting used to getting a good feel for yourself, getting comfortable with yourself. Because once you start deviating away from that, you start to feel lost.
Yeah.
So really what we want to do is we want to encourage people just to get comfortable with themselves, get to know themselves a little better. I'm grateful for the person that I am today. I don't know if this is the person that I'll be when it's all said and done, but I'm excited, you know, to continue down the journey.
I hear you.
I had a question. So, like, I'm a youth. I'm 23. I struggled with addiction my whole life. I spent a couple weeks this year in a hospital because, not really because of my addiction, like different addictions sent me there. You know, addiction to self, like self-destruction, alcohol, everything like that. But what does it take when, like, someone, a youth, is sent to you that doesn't want help? Like, does that ever happen? Because, like, I met people at the hospital who were sent there and they didn't want it. and they resisted the whole time, and I was there because I needed it, and I wanted to, like, fix myself. But I know so many people, like, I have family members who are struggling with addiction, and they don't want the help, but they're being sent to these recovery programs and hospitals, and they just don't want it. Like, do you, like, I'm sure this must happen, but, like, what do you do in this situation, even as, like, a loved one or, a, you know, a sober friend? Just try, like, try and help them, or...
It's tough. I mean, it really is. You know, you hear rock bottom a lot in recovery, and there's a reason for it. You can't force rock bottom on somebody, but it's significant because that's usually a turning point in one's life to where everything is just so real in front of them, and you know, maybe they finally do see the light, if you will, in terms of, you know, I do want to live, I want to have a healthy life. And for me, I had to go through what I went through to get there, and it was honestly, it was like a switch. It was a lot of sudden pain, and then everything, you know, kind of changed from there. Now it was a daily struggle for a while, because at that time I was battling the, you know, I'm just gonna have one last, you know, fun night. And I think that went on for about 2 weeks, and it was worse and worse every single night.
Yeah. I've been there.
I've said that.
I've been sober now for 4 months, because that was when I went to the hospital. It was like 4 months ago, and I haven't drank since. But like, thank you. But I have like friends who are getting married now, and like I have a wedding I'm going to in a couple weeks. And I know, like, the reception is going to be this huge party, and I'm so scared that I'm just going to relapse and go on this huge bender again, because I'm just, I've been really distancing myself from the atmosphere, but then I'm going to be thrown into it, and I really, like, am scared, I don't know what to do, you know? And I'm sure, like, a lot of people face this, but, like, you know, that doesn't make it easier, like, to think about.
Yeah, no, and it doesn't. And we try to, you know, we try to cover in our meetings, you know, future events, you know. So if someone is going to a wedding or a family, you know, function in the next couple of weeks where they know alcohol is going to be present, you know, let's kind of play it out, you know, how we think it's going to go. And then, you know, just try to put a plan in place of how we're going to respond and react. But... you know, in a lot of ways, it's if you're the one that's trying to assist, it's a lot like if you're a lifeguard trying to save somebody. You know, the way that they train you is, you know, put your feet out, and if the person's willing to be saved, you know, you go in there, you keep kind of a distance, you grab them and you save them. But if they're fighting and they're gonna take you down with them, you know, you gotta, you know, put that firm point in place where it's like, you know, I will save you, but we're, you know, but both of us aren't gonna go down.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that, going back to what Rachel was talking about, the end part of creating balance goes to get support. If you wanna take someone with you, you know, support at the wedding, someone that can help you balance out, you know, what you're facing, you know, if you, hey, make sure I'm only limited to one drink and no all. If you see me go to the bar again, make sure you get me out of there. Mm-hmm. You know, that's that balance. But number seven, the last one is have fun. You know, that's the most important thing is having fun. So if you could, you know, I encourage you to enjoy the wedding, go have fun with your friends, you know, but create that balance pre the wedding, you know, even this weekend, you know, talk to your friends like, man, y'all know I'm trying to be recovered. You know, don't peer pressure me, because friends could do that to you. Like, man, come on, let's just drink. It's a celebration. That celebration could cause you harm the next day or days later. So I really encourage you to literally, you know, take this in consideration, you know, getting support from your friends and creating a balance and make sure you guys having fun and you're having fun yourself.
Yeah.
And you're not feeling like, man, I need a drink because they're having more fun.
Yeah.
Be comfortable with being sober and being around people. I'll be honest with you. it's kind of fun being sober around a lot of drunk people because they just make a fool of themselves. And then you think to yourself, like, I wonder how I looked back then. Yeah. So, you know, have fun with it.
Yeah, I wish, like, this, like, your program, Generational Recovery, was around when I was growing up. Like, teaching kids, like, different ways to help people as well as help themselves with, like, addiction and everything. Because I grew up at the end of the DARE program. You probably know, you know, the DARE program that didn't really work at all, you know? I grew up at, like, the tail end of that. And, like, they didn't talk about addiction or drugs or anything after that. As soon as that phased out, it was just like, just don't do it. Like, and then they weren't gonna help you either way. Like, if you went to like a teacher and was like, I'm struggling with addiction, they'd be like, oh, cool, go talk to the school cop. And now you're involved in the legal system because now you're a minor in possession. And it's like, where's a healthy atmosphere to talk about these adult things that are happening to kids, you know? And I, you know, this is a really good program to have, but I'm so jealous that I didn't have it when I was younger. And maybe I wouldn't have done the things I would have done.
I mean, yeah, but, you know, you can't live in the past, you're gonna start now. So, Generation Recovery, we have it here.
Now.
So we're here to support you, you know, as your team here with Thinking Positive with Uncle Tim.
Yeah, but just like everyone in general, you know, not just me.
I mean, but, you know, we start here with you and then other people would, you know, tune in later on and everything. So we actually want to help individuals like yourself, younger generations. We don't want to just focus on kids. We want to focus on everybody because everyone deserves financial freedom, good friends and family, a good career, good physical health. Everyone should deserve fun. Now, I am looking at the book, but these are topics that are key to me because I believe they're very strong when it comes to education and relationship, even volunteering and social activities. So this is where to start in chapter 6 on page 64 of the book, where to start. I'm guessing this is like an atmosphere of what causes people to run into alcohol and drug abuse, or facing one of these issues right here.
Yeah, I think a lot of times people are just uncomfortable with, you know, their progression, their growth, and where they're at. You know, that's a big part of it. That's, we're turning our focus towards mental wealth, as we say. Just trying to have, you know, an all-encompassing positive lifestyle program. Building confidence with that, and building confidence within individuals. So, because like I said, you know, you could resolve the substance abuse issue, but it doesn't mean that, you know, hard times aren't gonna hit you. So it's like, how do we cope? So kind of the biggest thing that we're pushing with the mental wealth is we're trying to get rid of that stigma that goes in line with recovery. And we like to use the phrasing mental wealth because it's encouraging people to figure out avenues that are healthier. You know, figure out coping mechanisms that are healthier. You know, one of the ways that, you know, we in the past have, you know, tried to address issues is through therapy. And therapy, even still to this day, has kind of a stigma to it, you know?
Yeah.
So we're just trying to encourage people to get comfortable with themselves, get comfortable with who they are, and
to get over the embarrassment of going through that, right? Because that's the stigma. Oh, you're in recovery?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, now I'm supposed to feel bad because I'm helping myself. And that's not right, right?
At all.
When you get help, people are supposed to support that fact. But, you know, like you said, the stigma is he's getting help or she's getting help. So now they want to look at you in a different manner. But is there any digital way that you can reach the people a little bit more? You know, like, do you have any type of social media sites where you can sit on there and gather with the people, you know, like a Zoom, you know?
Yeah, we were doing Zooms during the pandemic. Our meetings are face-to-face now. We have Facebook and Instagram, and it's Generational Recovery. I don't know, do you hashtag it? Hashtag Generational Recovery.
On what?
Yeah, hashtag.
On what, the social media platform?
Facebook and Instagram.
No, Instagram hashtag.
Ads. Yeah. Those are ads.
Okay.
Twitter is hashtag.
All right.
Okay.
So, you know, we'd like to share positive messages through that. The biggest thing I've gotten out of, you know, through my own recovery and working with others is just being comfortable and sharing my story. At the time, it was very, very embarrassing, and there was a lot of shame. And so obviously, still now, you know, I'll have new people that come to our meetings, and that's what they're feeling. And, you know, whether you're going through a divorce or whether you're going through the legal system, I always, you know, remind them, it's like, hey, you know, we don't need to beat you up any more than maybe what you're already feeling you're getting.
Exactly.
And, you know, life in itself, it's a long, continuous journey. And I've been through some bad stuff, but honestly, it's made me the person I am today. And just in the fact that I'm able to help people in the way that I can, I truly wouldn't, I wouldn't change any of the things, even the bad that has happened in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I learned when I was at the hospital, like, earlier this year, that, like, as you said, sharing your story is half the battle. You know, acknowledging where you've come, because that was, like, the biggest, one of the biggest hardships for me when I was there, was just to, like, sit there and in group therapy and just talk about myself. And take time for yourself and say, hey, I'm here for a reason, and this is my reason. And that was the hardest thing, I think, for everyone there. And as you said, it's like in that situation, you can't beat, like, we're not here to beat you up, right? It's like, you're already here, might as well just say it and, you know, move on and let's grow together. And I mean, it kind of goes back to, like, I can't help you if you're not going to talk about it.
True.
I mean, how are you supposed to help someone if they're not going to tell you, like, what's wrong with you?
Right.
Can't go to a hospital with a broken arm and be like, I don't know, figure it out.
I think it's up to the person to get over the first hurdle. Like, you know, you have to get yourself over first. But I want to talk about journaling, you know, writing out those thoughts and those feelings. I think that helps a lot. A lot of the programs that I went through, I didn't know about journaling, but once I started it, it helped me get a lot of those feelings, a lot of that shame out. Even if I didn't read it to someone, if I just crumpled it up, if I burnt it, whatever, it got a lot of the emotions, a lot of the feelings out, a lot of the doubt, you know, just everything that goes on within my mind or a person's mind. Journaling really helps because you're able to get it out. If you can't talk to someone, writing it out on a piece of paper always helps. So if you can speak on that for the people.
Yeah, no, I'm a really big fan of journaling, and when I recommend journaling to people, I have to, it's usually not situations where I'm supposed to be really excited, but I do get excited about it because, you know, that's like a in-the-moment, you know, research, like firsthand research that's going to be going down, and to be able to, you know, get those feelings, those emotions out in the moment, and to progress, you know, weeks, months ahead of a time, and to go back and see, you know, the course that you went through, the pain that you were in. And the big thing too is, you know, a lot of times pain is rough, but when you start getting comfortable with just the fluctuations, you know, the highs and the lows, and just understanding, and that's what I like to try to remind people is, you can't have the highs without the lows.
Nope.
So you're going to have times where you're down. You're going to have times where you're really up. And the key is just, you know, let's embrace the times we're up, and let's not, if we can, as much as we can, you know, let's try not to let the times where we're down bring us too far down.
True. I agree with that. So I got another one. How do you build and maintain a healthy self-valuation when you're living in a household that's chaotic? you know, a lot of people don't recognize that, you know, because the kid doesn't have a lot to do with what goes on in the household, but he's affected by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, and I think you see that too in a lot of individuals that are not only in or have been in, but are used to unhealthy relationships.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, the definition of love is completely different to them than what it might be for someone else. So we really try to go over, you know, emotions and embrace feeling those emotions and understanding them. It's okay to feel anger. It's okay to feel sadness. It's okay to, in the moment, feel hate. But it's how we respond to that.
Yeah.
You know, it's, are we going to, you know, try to come up with coping strategies to work through it? And, you know, going back to like what you were saying about if it is an unhealthy, you know, environment at home, I mean, that is tough. It's tough too, and I've talked with principals and school boards about this, and you know, that's the biggest thing. It's like, how do we you know, train? And this is very interesting, because this was one of the battles that I had for a while.
Mm-hmm.
The question arose a few times, which was, you know, how can we educate teens on these issues that are going on in their lives when they're going home and the problem is right there, you know, in their face at home? And it was something that I struggled with for a while, and I couldn't come up with an answer. But, you know, the more and more I thought about our overall goal with generational recovery, how it's not just something that's going to be a 5-year program. We want to, you know, progress through, and obviously if we can, you know, we'd like to be up and running still, you know, 50 years from now. And kind of what I came to the conclusion was is, you know, we may not be able to get into the homes, because that was what was, that was kind of what was stated to me, was, you know, if we can get into the homes. Where I came out of it was, you know, we'll work with the students and the teens that we can now, and 20 years from now, we'll be in the homes.
Yeah. Just have to start somewhere, right?
You have to start somewhere, and that's how I, you know, I run my meetings. I'll run my meetings if there's 30 people there. I'll run my meeting if it's just one person there. And the way I feel is if I can take some of that negative emotion, the negative feelings that someone is having about themselves in that moment, if I can just, at the very least, subside those for a day, it's worth it for me.
All the time, because it always feels good to help someone else out of their uncomfortableness, you know. And that's one of the reasons that I'm so passionate about trying to help the youth, plus myself and others, you know, because some people just don't have nobody. And that's one of the things I'm realizing is, man, people out here by themselves. Young kids nowadays, they just don't have the proper parents, man. You know, we always hear the kids getting blamed for certain things, but nobody's putting attention where it needs to go. And it's like, who's raising the kid?
Right.
And then seven out of 10, nobody's raising the kid properly. But you got to really take a step back and be aware of that and say, you know what? Can't put all this on the child. Because the child learned it from somewhere. He heard it from somewhere. She heard it from somewhere, you know? So I commend you again, man, in your program. You are going to get into homes, because everyone has social media. Everyone has a phone now. So just tune into, say, your tags again on your social media. You know, keep pushing that social media, and the kids will pick it up, man. They have no other choice, man, because if you want help, you're going to reach out for it. You know, kids going to get away from the parents that's not supportive, and they're going to find support. I believe that, you know.
And yeah. I know it sounds like I've got like every problem under the sun, but like I grew up in like a broken home. Not really a broken home, because I know my mom sometimes watches the episodes I'm on, but like I grew up, you know, in like my brother did some really bad things to me when I was young, and I didn't have anyone to go talk to about it. Like the school, like, didn't really talk. Like, I went to the school to try and help, and all they did was like almost tear our family apart.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there was no other outside programs I knew of that could just sit there and help me, you know, sit there and talk to me about what's going on, what this problem is. And as a kid, when this is happening, no matter like what it is, you know, if your parent is just not being a parent, or it's some kind of outside abuse in the home with traumatic experiences, the kids feel like they can't, like, even teenagers feel like they don't have any weight to throw around in the home, because the parents are always just like, hey, this is our home. I own this house. You know, you don't pay the bills. Mm-hmm. When you start paying the bills, you can have some opinions around here.
That's all homes growing up. Yep.
Yeah, it's like I grew up that way. It was like, you pay the bills, you have some opinion around what happens around here. What goes on the walls, what this, that, the other thing. Or you wait till you're 18 and you move out. Get your own home. Make your own rules. And a lot of kids grow up that way, mm-hmm. and they feel stuck.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I really think that, like, open, honest communication, you know, between parents and children or teenagers is important, to just be like, hey, let's sit down and have like a family discussion on what is happening in the house and how is it affecting you? What, like, your grade, either like your grades are falling or you're getting addicted to something, or like, for me, that was both. You know, I had addiction from my parents for, I don't even know how long. Mm. I don't even know. Honestly, like it was really till I went to the hospital this year that they really found out I was an addict. Mm. You know, because I grew up doing propellants, stealing alcohol, doing whatever I could to get high, get drunk, just to stop the pain inside. But when you're young, you don't feel like you can go to anyone, mm-hmm. talk about that thing. And, like, that's a very real... I didn't even grow up in the inner city. It's not even it's not just an inner city issue.
Right.
It's true. It's an everywhere issue.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and the reality is, you know, our program's either going to work or it's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you if it's going to work at this point. I believe in it, and I truly feel like it will work. But every single one of us as individuals, you know, we have to take responsibility. And, you know, one of the things, Tim, that you were saying earlier that really goes far as, you know, how we can help one another is the community element. You know, everybody is in this one community, and whether or not it's your kids, it's the neighbors, it's your nephews, your nieces, you're not raising your kids 100% of the time. They're going to school, mm-hmm. they have friends,
mm-hmm.
You know, their friends have parents, you know, there's all this interaction with all these different individuals, so... and obviously we don't want to shelter our kids, you know, we don't want to hug them too tightly. We want to give them that leeway, but, you know, what we can do as community is, you know, really, you know, work together, come up with these after school programs.
Yeah.
And, you know, try to get these outlets out there to where we can, you know, positively, influence, you know, younger, individuals, you know, whether it's through mentoring, coaching. Because that's ultimately going to, you know, that's going to be the generation that takes care of us when we're older.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Roles do change. The roles do change. I just wanted to harp on the whole fact that, you know, the old way of parenting, it was needed at that time. But, you know, as times change, parenting has to change. You know, I noticed that a lot of kids that I'm around, you know, they just want attention. You know, you get the look at me, you know, are you watching? Are you looking? You know, because they want that moment for you to just look at them, you know, and give them eye-to-eye contact. And a lot of people, I noticed myself wasn't doing it. You know, a kid would be talking to me. I'm trying to clean. I'm trying to do this. I'm trying to do that. And they're like, are you watching? Are you listening? To watch, you know, and it's just like they just want that moment. So to all parents and people that's taking care of kids, yo, give them that attention. Just to get it, just stop what you're doing for the moment and just give them a good eye-to-eye contact and just hear them out, you know, because if you don't give them the attention, they're going to find the wrong attention, and they're going to use that to go into other things, you know. And that's one of the things I work hard on. It's like being able to give them that attention, man. You know, everyone has a short attention span. I get it. But when it comes to kids and their attention that they want, we have to give it to them. If not, they're going to get lost. They're going to get disinterested, you know, and they're going to find other things to
grab their attention.
Yeah. And so let's not do that, right? So that's one of those things I just want to put out there. And I got a question for you. How do you overcome negative perceptions of yourself? Because a lot of kids have a negative perception of themselves because of the peer pressure, because of what they see on TV. You know, so much on TV is, we'll call it fugazi and fake, right? You know, nothing's really real, but it seems real. You got girls that want to be so skinny, but they don't know that's Photoshop. You got people looking at an image of someone's always dressed nice, but no one's dressed nice 24/7, right? So it's these false perceptions out here. So now you got kids looking at themselves as worthless because they don't have, or they're not getting, or they don't feel adequately loved. We'll just say that, right? So you got anything on that?
So, you know, I don't know exactly how I'm coming off right now, but it's a day-to-day battle with me even to this day. Even, you know, right and wrong choices. You know, is this a short-term game, but a long-term, is this going to, you know, tear me apart? And really focusing in on that. And what I try to spend a lot of time doing is being accountable. And I think that's something that we need to educate people on and hold people accountable.
Yeah.
Because you are going to have a lot of junk out there, especially with social media. I was thinking about this quite a bit today because, I don't know, man. Like, I'm 35, so I grew up like in, really into hip hop, and I got into it, I think, right after Tupac and Biggie, and,
came through the golden era, right?
Yeah, but they, you know, they were going through all that crazy stuff, and you see that now with podcasters, you know, and you don't know what's real, you don't know what's fake, what's set up, and you just, I was wondering about that today, because it's, I started thinking about just things that have happened lately, and it's like, oh, this is getting out of hand, and, but there's people that are watching that, and there's people that are normalizing that.
Yeah.
You know, they're normalizing the filters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thinking that that's normal, and we need to get to a point where we're being true to ourselves and setting a good example. And like I said, this is something that I really try to spend a lot of time on day to day, just getting in that mindset.
Yeah.
And I have a few businesses. I have a lot of different clients that I work with on a day to day basis, and there was a period where, if I had a bad client, it would mess with me hardcore. And I finally got to the point where it's like, this isn't life. Like this isn't, you know, I'm taking it too serious, honestly.
Exactly.
And I started, you know, if it was negativity that was being brought my way, but I knew that I was in the right, that I knew that I was even, you know, because I'll admit when I'm wrong. I feel like it's even tougher battle if you don't admit it, and then you have to try to come back later and resolve it.
So you own it, right?
Yeah. So I just own it, and I move forward. And sometimes I'll get a pretty harsh in the moment reaction, and but I don't take it home with me anymore.
That's good.
That's the key. Leave it where it's at. Yeah. Do you guys? Encourage meditation. You know, I think that helps a lot with just getting a lot of the negatives away from you. Like, I found meditation in my life. Before that, it was chaos. You know, like, I didn't know which way to go. I was having a midlife crisis, I would say, and I was just all over the place. And then I learned how to calm myself down through meditation. And I've been better off for it. So I try to get the kids and anybody that'll listen, just, hey, just take time out, man, and just get in a comfortable place, sit down, fold your legs, you know, listen to some things, you know, even if it's just the ocean sounds or some soft music, but whatever makes you comfortable. But find a way to meditate on life, and it'll help you relieve a lot of the problems and the issues that are really just not really as big as you think they are. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of things we magnify in our mind, and they really don't even have a significant place. But in our mind, we make these big assumptions, and we put ourselves out there. In reality, it's not even that much of an issue if you just really just take time, breathe, and think about what's really important. So,
Tim, I'm gonna be real with you. If you tell a kid, let's meditate.
Yeah.
Man, if when I was growing up, if someone's like, let's just meditate for a minute, I'd be like, yo, I'm checking out.
Like, you gotta ease them into it. You know, like, it's kind of like with the whole, you find a way to coerce them. You know, you gotta put it in a kid space. But if you're a teenager,
I'm not knocking meditation. Yeah. I love that. Like, I found the value in deep breathing and guided meditation in my 20s. But, you know, when you're young and going through a lot, like, taking the time to sit there and meditate,
yeah,
like, that's, the biggest struggle of the year. Is, you know, you've got all these things going on in your head, you're maybe unmedicated, you're addicted to something, you're just
right.
Like, now I gotta sit here and battle the thoughts in my head.
And that's the part though, right? Because you have to win that within battle. That's what you're teaching them, is how to overcome that inner battle. You know, because you have a battle of feeling good about yourself, and then you have a battle of feeling ugly about yourself. And kids don't know how to separate the two too many times.
I think if you're gonna get like a kid into meditation or like deep breathing or everything, it's gotta be guided. You can't just have them just be like, take some time out of your day and just sit there.
No,
in your thoughts. No, you have to guide them through that, those thoughts and feelings.
True.
Yeah. Well, meditation can be a lot of things. You know, the goal of meditation is to, you know, find a mentally clear place. And a lot of people don't realize this, but a lot of people discovered meditation through working out, going to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have the routine, they're focused on it, and just that physical activity, the amount it does to your body, it's amazing. You know, I think it takes a while before you can start getting that routine and before you start getting the muscles going. But if you can find yourself in that frame of mind, I mean, you can work out a lot of...
It's a real stress reliever.
Yeah.
You know, take out a lot of the negative energy, you know? Mm-hmm. That's why people in jail systems, you know, they're less likely to be less violent when they're constantly working out, you know, because all of that pent-up energy has to go somewhere,
mm-hmm.
especially if it's negative.
Right.
So you have to pump it out. You know, like you say, working out is a big plus to it. You know, that was one of the things. So I used to be a lot heavier. And like I say, I was going through a lot in my mind and through my life. You know, I was addicted. You know, I had some drug problems, and I just didn't know where to go with it. But it started with working out. It started with learning how to meditate and really just take time to myself, you know. And I'm a big believer in that, man. Self-care, self-love. It starts there. And that's with the, like you said, accountability. You know, it starts with you. You know, we can't just say, you need to help me. Or why are y'all not helping me? You have to first step up for your own self. You know, you got to be in line. You got to be the first person in line for yourself. No one's going to step up as much as you need you to step up for yourself, the way I see it, you know. So accountability is big.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff out there, too. I just always encourage people to discover your program.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe it's working out, maybe it's meditation, maybe it's reading. But find a space where you can be fully with yourself and fully comfortable with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that self-care, that me time, that especially if we're trying to get into positive mindset, and you're setting that time aside to where, you know, it's you in your space focused on positivity. You know, there's going to be no negative external energy coming your way, you know. and it's going to take practice. Like I said, it takes practice with me. It's been 2.5 years of daily practice, but I can say I'm getting better at it.
Can you get people 3 things that helped you?
How?
3 of your main things. Yeah. Everybody has something different, right?
No. Yeah. Letting go is the main one. Letting go. Trusting yourself. And the third one is, honestly, it's just enjoy life. Like, you know, sometimes I think we make too much of what's going on, you know, on this little ball, you mm-hmm. know, that's in this huge, you know, universe of space.
And we putting it to one little thing, right? So I just want to touch on more of when you say trusting yourself, you know, what does that mean to you, you know, when you say learn to trust yourself?
Yeah, so the biggest problem I had was boundaries, boundary setting.
Boundaries are huge. I had to learn boundaries recently. Like, my therapist was just like, Rachel, you need to set some boundaries for sure. These people. And I'm like, what does that even mean?
Right? Yeah. No, and the most powerful word you can ever say to somebody is no. Mm-hmm. And I got myself in a lot of trouble when I first started my business. It was just because I was afraid that, you know, the work wasn't gonna, you know, be coming in on a daily basis. So, you know, it was a lot of yeses. It was a lot about figuring this out. And it doesn't take long before those problems start adding up. You know, and it's a good problem to have, you know, to be bigger than what you expected. But the other thing, too, is you don't ignore the red flags. So if your intuition is telling you something, you know, don't ignore it. I talk a lot about the universe. Some people have different names for it, but I like to go with the universe. It kind of covers everything. But you know, it's yin and yang, good and bad, positive and negative.
Mm-hmm.
And I have something inside of me, a feeling that is special. And it's my relationship with whatever you want to call it. I have my name for it. But it's whatever you want to call it. And the more and more you ignore that voice inside you, the further you're going to get away from being yourself. And it was just practice. It was practice saying no. It was, you know, this isn't going to be healthy. And there was a lot of times, too, when I started getting good at seeing problematic, you know, because if you learn from your mistakes, you know, even just in a business setting, you know, you'll understand, okay, this is a healthy person, this is a not healthy person. And you can start navigating through life or your everyday, you know, 40 hours a week business and say, okay, this is going to, the chances of this, you know, not going as smooth as I want it to be are a lot higher than this over here. So, you know, settle in, figure out what's healthy, figure out what's you, and truly trust yourself, because we have, you know, we're all individuals. So everything that you see is from your perspective. Everything that you see is from your perspective. You know, my yeah. perspective is my perspective. And it's this whole survival of the fittest, you know, atmosphere that we've, for generations, that humans have evolved through. So it's always going to be natural for us to be selfish and to protect ourselves and to consider, you know, what's going on internally. And I say that because a lot of times I remind people too, it's like, don't get caught up in how you perceive something. Because mm-hmm. I guarantee you, there's that person's just thinking all about, you know, they're probably thinking yeah. of something completely different.
They don't mean that to them, right?
They don't mean it at all to them. You know, you're thinking about you. When you're talking to them, you're thinking that they're thinking about you. But what does our internal dialogue, you know, encompass? A lot of times it's life. It's what we're going through. It's, you know, it's what we have going on after this, you know, dinner. And if there's lingering issues with other people, you know, we're probably reminiscing or ruminating about that quite a bit, too.
True.
Very true to that. All right, before we run out of too much time, a lot of people in a pandemic, during this pandemic, you know, face a struggle like Rachel was talking about. She's worried about relapsing. Is there any, like, top things that we haven't touched on to prevent that from happening that you could talk about? Or
Yeah, so
I got one. I'll give you some time.
Yeah.
I would say take a chaperone. You know, if you feel like that, find someone that you really can trust and don't feel judged by, and say, hey, just come with me, man, and watch me. You know, it's always good to have a good friend, man, in a fight that you need someone with you. And that's a good fight, you know, to bring someone along and say, hey, man, just watch me, man. You know, I'm not saying I'm going to go crazy.
Right.
But just to be there, if I need somebody to say, man, I really feel like having a drink. No, it's okay, bro. You don't need to do that. Or homegirl, you don't need to do that. You know what I'm saying? So I would say just take somebody with you. You know, take a chaperone, somebody you trust and you feel you can confide in and they're not judgmental about it. And I think that's one of the biggest things is people worrying about how people judging them because they ask them for help. So I would say take a chaperone.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say was, you know, we're not perfect and we're not going to be perfect. Don't be afraid to ask for help.
Never.
I had another question. How can we make recovery cool? You know, a lot of peer pressure comes from trending topics. You know, if it's not a celebrity doing it, if it's not your favorite actor doing it, it's not cool at all. But I feel like recovery is very cool when, and I look at it this way, you're cool when you work on you. You're cool when you want to better you. You're cool when you're trying to better your circle of friendship and you're trying to do positivity. That what makes you cool. I feel like you're lame when you're dragging your friends to drink or sneak out to do drugs. You're peer pressuring them.
I think it goes back to what Scott was saying earlier is like get rid of the people that tell you tell you no. You know, that's like, oh, I want to recover. Get rid of the people that are like, don't do that. Right. Come out with me. It kind of comes back to who you're hanging out with, who you're surrounding yourself with. Get rid of the people who are gonna enable you. Yeah. Get rid of the enablers and then surround yourself with people who care and want you to succeed.
They say get rid of the yes men in your circle.
Right.
Because yes men always go, oh, where are you straight? You good. You messed up. They go, no, you good, man. Because they don't want to be outside of the circle no more, right? So get rid of the yes men in so many words. I agree.
Yeah, going back to journaling, you don't have to just journal about... journaling is unlimited. You can talk about your experiences from, you know, yesterday, from today. What I always challenge people to do is to discover who they could be.
Mm.
What is your potential?
Yeah.
And figure out how you could attain that. And if it doesn't line up, if it doesn't add up to you achieving those goals, to you being the most human, the most that you could offer, your community, your network, you know, and take pride in that, you know? A lot of people, you know, they don't understand that the power that comes with free will is that we have the choice to not only make the right decision, but we have the choice to not make the wrong decision.
Mm-hmm. That's deep.
Very deep.
That's deep right there. It's always about choices, you know, and too many times we just overlook the right choice to make, right, because of whatever reason. But you're right. It is all about choices. So
embrace it.
Yeah, embrace it.
And I think embracing change is something we all need to do because change is very important. It's very needed. We all need to change one step at a time with each other. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to happen overnight. It doesn't have to happen in a month. It could take 6 months. But as long as you take the effort to start changing, it's key. So I want to thank you, Scott, for coming out. With Generational Recovery. Before we go, I want to make sure your social media is Facebook and Instagram at Generational Recovery.
Yes.
Okay. So you can all follow that at Generational Recovery on Facebook and social media. Once again, thank you, Scott, for coming by and sitting down with us and making recovery cool again with Smart Recovery. And thank you so much.
It was Uncle a pleasure Tim. Having you. I enjoyed the dialogue. I'm glad that we got Rachel to chime in because she's been through a lot. And we just needed that, right? So you came at the right time.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, we all been through a lot, not just singling her out. Everyone's been through a lot, you know. So I thank you for showing up and thank for being a guest.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
You're welcome.
Till next time.
Next time, you all.
We're clear.
All right. All right.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.